We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Game Summers, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
Well, it is a very good evening to you and how you be at 8:05, 30 seconds to go right along with it on a snowy and windy and icy and cold Wednesday night. But other than all of that, it's wonderful. And it is Steve Summers here and you there and Peter Hoffman and Robbie Rosenhauser on the other side of the glass in the 1-877-337 6666 for another 2 hour smooth set up until JJ after dark at 10 on your fan, New York City. And of course, we welcome to the program and the voice familiar to on this radio station on all the programs, Albert Breer from MMQB. Albert, how the hey are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Steve?
Well, we're wiping away the ice and the snow and managing, as you know from New Yorkers. And where you are, can you tell us, is the sun shining with you, Albert?
I think the sun is not shining, but we haven't gotten too much snow yet.
Yes.
So I guess the rain's better than the snow because you don't have to clean it up.
Well, that's right. Now, here's my first question. How much importance should we put with the combine?
My feeling on that's always been that the stuff that's most important is the stuff that we don't see. Now, I know why people get excited over the Olympic testing, and there's some phenomenal stuff there as far as what guys are able to achieve athletically.
Mm-hmm.
But what the teams are looking for, again, is the stuff that's not on camera, and that is A, the medicals, and B, the interviews. Because that's where they're going to find out things that they don't know. The combine testing, they're looking to confirm what they do know. You know, they get in the interview setting. That's a chance for a lot of the coaches who are just getting involved in the process to meet these kids for the first time and try to get them off a little bit and see whether or not they're a personality fit. These are the guys who are going to be working with them on a day-to-day basis, of course. And then the medical part of it is really important,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like in the NFL, college football teams do hide injuries and players hide injuries. And so, you know, it's the first chance for NFL teams to have their own doctors look at scans and x-rays and all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff mm-hmm. to figure out where the guys are medically. So it's a boring answer, Steve, but the real value in the combine for all the teams is in the medicals and the interviews, and that stuff can actually make a real impact on where guys are drafted.
Albert, you don't give boring answers, and I think no, and you don't. And again, that's about as thorough, and we can understand that because otherwise it looks like Olympic trials. You know, how fast can he run, and how high can he jump, and so forth and so on. But the bonding that goes on with possible coaches and players, executives and players, general managers, the whole thing. No, your answer was very thorough, and nobody is surprised to hear that coming from you. In other words, what we're going to get, I don't think on the Wonderlic test, I guess we're not going to hear any more about questions from coaches to players like, do you like girls?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get questions that are a little off the wall, and obviously the questions that are coming are to try to counteract the coaching all of these guys have had,
right.
You know, and that these guys don't come into this thing blind. They've been trained for absolutely everything they're going to face, and a big part of that is the interview. And so, you know, it always seems weird when you hear, you know, some of the questions that come out of these interviews.
Right.
But the intention is to get the guys off of their coaching. You
yeah,
know, and
I,
so
I mean, yeah.
If you want to catch a guy off guard,
yeah.
You might ask him something that's a little off the wall and see how he reacts to it.
I mean, that really happened, though. I mean, didn't a coach ask a player?
That did happen. Yep.
Yeah.
And there have been other. You know, I mean, you know, there was the one at Des Bryant a few years ago. You know, is your mother a hooker?
Unbelievable.
There are there are questions that go to these players that are either very personal, could be offensive. Sometimes it's just a little weird. In a lot of cases, the idea is, how do we get this guy off of his game a little bit? How do we get this guy off of his coaching? And a lot of times the best way to get someone off their coaching is to make them feel uncomfortable and see how they react. The idea for the teams is to try to figure out who these kids really are. And if you're just asking them, you know, the boilerplate football questions that anyone would expect in these settings, you might not get much out of the experience.
Yeah, and of course, because there is trash talking, if a kid gets a reputation of being thin-skinned, that may not be a player you want on your team. You want to have that deflected, you want to ignore it, give a little trash talking back. And one of the great questions of all time, you're making me think, Albert, with when Doug Williams was quarterbacking with Washington, and during Super Bowl media day, I believe it was, somebody asked him, you can't make it up. Somebody had asked Doug Williams, how long have you been a black quarterback?
And I don't think each of these questions have a purpose. And again, a lot of the purpose of the interview is to just try to get these guys to have to think on their feet.
Sure.
And it's such a huge part of playing football. A big part of playing football is, you know, when things go haywire, how are you going to react? And, you know, it's sort of the idea of the entire experience for the players. They're really in a pressure cooker for 4 days straight.
Right.
And, you know, it's a tough environment to be in. What they're being asked to do over 4 days is strenuous. And, you know, in the end, you know, the one of the big takeaways for all the teams is, how does each kid handle going through that meat grinder?
Yeah, and it's become an event, like the home run derby with baseball, now the combine. As we used to say, and certainly in New York, we do talk baseball 24/7, 12 months a year. Now it's with the NFL as well. So here, let me ask you, what do you know? And we're going to interview him in about an hour. What do you know about Greg Sinnott, the tackle from Wagner, Staten Island, New York?
I wish I could say I'm that deep in my draft preparation where I know a lot about him, but I don't know much.
He is a kid who played basketball, was 6'8", put on some weight, and was, from what we understand, just very impressive at the combine. And maybe a second or third round draft choice for some NFL team, and we hope so, a local kid.
Yeah, and a lot of those kids with basketball backgrounds have made it. You know, in the tight end position, it's obvious. You know, Jimmy Graham was a basketball player. Tony Gonzalez, if you want to go way back more recently, Antonio Gates. We've seen a lot of tight ends come through that pipeline. And we're starting to see some more tackles now, too, you know. The one great example recently would be George Fant, who plays for the Seahawks. But there are plenty of examples of guys who play basketball who have the bodies to play football, and I think this kid would be another one of those.
All right, give me your take on Ogletree coming to the Giants, and why are the Rams trading him?
Well, a big part of it was his inconsistency in the contract, too. You know, and it seems a little strange that a team would sign a guy to a big deal like they did. At the number that they did back in October and then deal him a few months later, you know, I think the Rams sort of view this as a sunk cost and they didn't want to chase their losses on it. And look, part of it, too, is the defense he's playing in. And the fact that in Wade Phillips' defense, the value really is on the edge rushers and the corners. One of the reasons why they drafted or they traded for Marcus Peters. And so I think it's a combination of things. He wasn't as consistent as they would have liked. And, you know, his play didn't merit the number he was making. Now, you know, you flip it over to the Giants and, you know, you look at what sort of defense James Fetcher is going to run there in New York. And you look at the value that Dave Gettleman's put in linebackers over the course of his career and off-the-ball linebackers. And we see, you know, the great success that they had in Carolina with Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly. And you can certainly see the match there. And so I think it was as much as anything else, a case of a guy who had a little bit of a shaky year in his last home, who was working with a new coaching staff. And, you know, the team looked at it and decided, you know, we can do almost as well with a player that's a lot cheaper at this position. So we're going to move on from him. And then, of course, you know, the Giants bring in a new general manager who puts a lot of value in that spot. The Giants had a hole there. And so that's why it matched up.
And the Giants were last, and from what I understand, we're talking with Albert Breer, MMQB, formerly of the NFL Network. Albert, you know as well as anyone else, maybe better than most, that the Giants were last in allowing 12 touchdowns by tight ends. Now, again, over the middle, I mean, they didn't have it with the Casillas and Kennard, B.J. Goodson.
Yeah.
No, they needed some line. Is Ogletree going to help? He's got speed, and we know he was a safety.
Yeah, well, he's a little bit of a unique player in that sense, in that there aren't a lot of guys at that position who can legitimately play all three downs. And at his best, Ogletree can. You know, he's got the wheels to do it, and he's big and stout enough to play on early downs. And so that makes him a different sort of player in that, you know, he is capable of playing on all three downs, and that's really where his value is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'd say he's certainly an upgrade over the guys they had. Now, I don't know if he's going to be the one that's going to be chasing tight ends down the seam on a consistent basis, but he's capable of covering. He's capable of playing on all three downs, and that's, you know, one big reason, of course, why Gettleman went and got him. And having, you know, worked with a couple players like that, and Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly, he sees value in those sorts of guys.
And another trade with Philadelphia and Seattle and Russell Wilson now, no longer hitting batting practice home runs. Russell Wilson now has a new receiver to throw to.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about this one is just sort of the return that the Eagles got, or that the Seahawks got for Michael Bennett. Because I think a year or two ago, most of us would have seen him as a premier player. The Seahawks actually went and paid him at the end of 2016. And what is it now? You know, 14, 15 months later, they're going and dealing him off. And really, it's, you know, for a developmental receiver going to Seattle. And that's what Marcus Johnson is, a developmental receiver going to Seattle. And a seventh-round pick with Bennett and a fifth-round pick going to Philly. And so, to me, this trade, as much as anything else, is about where the Seahawks were with Michael Bennett, where his play was. He was very up and down last year. He got hurt and, you know, clearly had been a little bit of a problem for the coaches. And so, you know, it's definitely a case of, you know, the Seahawks having decided beforehand they were moving on from this guy. And it's one of a handful of guys that I expect to be gone that have been pretty prominent in Seattle over the years. They're turning the page. They're clearly getting younger on defense. They wanted Bobby Wagner to be at the center of all of it. And maybe didn't feel like Bennett was the right guy to bring back. And, you know, you can see what the rest of the league thought of Bennett at this point, given the return that they came back to Seattle for him.
And now, so you have Fletcher Cox. What is it? Fletcher Cox and Michael
Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham. Now, we assume Vinnie Curry is going to be gone. But,
right,
you know, Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, their first-round pick from a year ago, Chris Long, we'll see whether or not he's back. And then Timmy Jernigan, Michael Bennett, and Fletcher Cox. It's as good a defensive front as there is in football. And one of the advantages the Eagles have here, I don't know that Michael Bennett can play 80-90% of the snaps anymore and remain effective. He, you know, again, he's a little older. He turns 33 in November. You know, well, the Eagles aren't going to be asking him to. You know, the Eagles are going to have the opportunity, like they did last year, to rotate all of these guys through. To me, it's, you know, another sign of the emphasis the Eagles have put on their offensive and defensive lines. And, you know, an example of them being a little creative in saving a little bit of money in going from Vinnie Curry to Michael Bennett. Even if Michael Bennett isn't the same player that he was in Seattle, and I don't think anybody expects him to be, they won't be asking quite as much of him because of the depth of their rotation.
And Vinnie Curry is going to have to find a new home, yes?
Yeah, and that's the trade-off here. I mean, he was going to cost them $10 million. Or I think $9 million. Bennett only cost $5.5 million, so they saved $3.5 million in the deal. With Brandon Graham playing as well as he did last year, with Derek Barnett emerging and, you know, have the team having spent a first round pick on him, Vinny Curry was probably going to turn into a spot player next year. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, they take him out of the equation. They add Michael Bennett in, where Michael Bennett doesn't need to be a full-time guy. He can make his impact in spots like they'd envision Curry doing it. And Philly gets him for cheaper than they would have had Curry.
And Seattle wasn't expected to bring back Paul Richardson. So if he leaves, then they have Marcus Johnson.
Right, right. Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, I don't know how much Seattle's really expecting out of Marcus Johnson. This is more about just turning the page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at the way their offseason set up, it was always going to be about five guys. You had Michael Bennett, who was older and, again, declining as a player. You had two others in Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, who were going into contract years. And then you've got another two in Clint Averill and Cam Chancellor, who are coming off of neck injuries that could be career-threatening. And so that's five guys that have played really prominent roles for you on defense. And Seahawks had a decision to make coming into the offseason. You know, do we go forward with our core, or do we rip the Band-Aid off? And I think what you're seeing now is the beginning of ripping the Band-Aid off.
Okay, we're talking with Albert Breer for a couple more minutes. Now we get rid of the hors d'oeuvres. Now we get rid of the two trades from today that we hear about and get into what this radio station, Albert, has been doing 24/7. And I think sometimes March 14th is a bigger day than March 29th when Major League Baseball in New York opens up and free agency. We understand the Vikings from some reports. We don't know how accurate. Maybe you don't either, but I want your take on the Minnesota Vikings and 3 years and $91 million for Kirk Cousins.
I don't think the Vikings numbers are going to be that high, personally. You know, 91 over 3 would be steep for them. Maybe they'll get there. My sense is, at least last week, they weren't there yet. I think the Jets will go to whatever number they need to go to get him. And I think Kirk's going to wind up having a tough decision.
Wait. Hold on just a second. Did you say that the Jets will do what they have to do to get Kirk Cousins?
I think they will do within reason. I mean, they're not going to give him a piece of the team.
Is Kirk Cousins going to choose the Jets over Minnesota?
I don't think it's impossible. And here's the key, okay? Kirk, for his, you know, I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but you know, Kirk wants to feel like he's the franchise quarterback wherever he goes. And you know, he saw for 3 years in Washington the way the franchise quarterback's treated. He had a front row seat for that with Robert Griffin III. Never felt that way in his 3 years as starter in Washington. He never felt like they were building around him. He never felt like it was about him. This isn't a prima donna thing. I think as much as anything else, this is finding a place where he's comfortable, that they feel strongly enough in him to say, okay, you're our quarterback, and we're building around you for the foreseeable future. It's a subtle thing, but I think it matters. And that's why I don't think the raw dollars of the contract are as important as the guarantees.
I think, yeah.
And if he has money, like I think one of the keys is going to be, do your guarantees go into year three? Are there ways for you to get out of the contract after 1 year, after 2 years? Those are the things that I think are important here. I think they have to show Kirk, both teams, that they are willing to commit to him long term and say, we're building around you. You're our starting quarterback for the foreseeable future. I know the Jets are willing to do that.
How far the Vikings are
willing to go to prove that, I think matters.
Well, you're telling us that he wants to feel wanted more than winning.
No, I'm not.
Okay, yes, you are, because...
Here's what I'm telling you. What I'm telling you is he's been in a year-to-year situation in the last few years. And it's easy to look at his situation the last few years and see where he's wondering if he's going to be the Redskins starting quarterback the next year. And having gone through that, I think part of the deal here for him is, all right, like I already went through that. I want to know where I'm going to be in 2019. I want to know where I'm going to be in 2020. I want to know that I can put down roots with a team, and I know that the team's building around me. It's again, sort of a subtle thing, but it's like there's real value in knowing you're going to be a team starting quarterback going forward. There's real value in knowing the team's building around you. Feeling wanted, I guess, is one way to put it. But look, could you blame him if he looked at an offer from Minnesota or someone else and there were ways for the team to get out of the deal after a year or two? Would you blame him for looking at that and saying, I'm not signing that? I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, I would blame him. I would. I would blame him. I would say he's an idiot because he has no one to hand off to with the Jets, no one to throw to. He hasn't got a defense to put him in good field position to get three and outs for him to be on the field to throw the football into the end zone.
Right.
The Minnesota Vikings are, and I do believe that the Minnesota Vikings are going to overpay, and I do believe the Jets. If you're Kirk Cousins, you're happy the Jets are in this running for him because all he does is just up the market and up the price and Minnesota will pay. I can't believe, Albert, that you are saying all of this.
I'm just telling you. Like, I think that the way the contract sets up and knowing that he's going to be a team starting quarterback for the next few years.
Albert,
here's the thing. That matters. And if the Vikings
be the starting quarterback for a team that was one game away from the Super Bowl. I mean, he's going to give or take a couple of million already.
He doesn't want to go year to year anymore.
And how about this? Let me ask you this about Kirk Cousins. Is he, there was somewhere around the middle of the season, after a good game from him, after a Washington win, he threw a couple of touchdown passes, had a good game.
Yep.
He's leaving the field, going through the tunnel to the locker room, sees a reporter that had written something negative about him either the week before, the game before, and says, "You like that?" So and you remember the incident. My question is Kirk Cousins a little thin-skinned? And if he is, coming to New York is not the place for a thin-skinned athlete.
Well, wouldn't you say Washington would be a pretty tough place to play, too?
Well, when you're employed by that organization, yes.
I mean,
and you could say that about the Jets. They don't have a winning tradition. We understand, but coming to New York, you know.
I mean, I would tell you though, the playing under the spotlight as a Redskin in Washington,
it's
that
not
much
like
different.
It's not like New York, Albert. You know that the fans here as loyal and passionate and knowledgeable and out of patience they are the Jet fan with losing and looking for a quarterback. And there are a lot of Jet fans who want to see Kirk Cousins. I'm telling you,
playing in Washington for the Redskins isn't that much different than that. It's been a circus there for a long time.
And playing in front of politicians?
They're the number one team in that town. There's a lot of, like, it is a weird place. It's a difficult place to play.
More difficult because of Daniel Snyder, who doesn't know what he's doing half the time.
That's fair.
Let me ask you this. All right, I'm a little bit surprised because you're as knowledgeable as can be.
Yeah, and I'm not, look. Here's what I'm telling you. Okay, I can't be more clear about this.
And your opinion is respected.
I just don't think he wants to go year to year anymore. I just don't think he has much interest in that. And if someone puts a deal in front of him that it looks like a year-to-year deal, it looks like the team's gotten out after the first year or the second year, I think he's going to balk at that. I think he wants to go to a place where he can put the books down and where he can build.
That's
important to a lot of football players.
Well, from the Vikings.
It's important to quarterbacks in particular.
Okay. You know that we have all the respect in the world for your opinion. But here's the thing. I mean, the reports out of Minnesota, from the Minnesota website, and again, whether it's a leak, whether it's a smokescreen, who knows already. But here's what we were hearing. 3 years, guaranteed $91 million, Albert.
That's not from Minnesota, though. If you click on that, you'll see that was a rumor that came from a radio station in Washington. It came from a former Redskins player who heard it from an agent that doesn't represent Kirk. At the combine, so that where that came from, and look, this isn't a shot at Chris Cooley, but I mean, you look at the, where that came from, and then the Minnesota website took it and aggregated it.
Okay.
And so I wouldn't, I'll just put it this way, I wouldn't put too much stock in that. That was not from a Minnesota media outlet. It wasn't from any media outlet. It was from an ex-player who heard a rumor in Indianapolis.
And I believe in rumors. No, I'm
kidding. But if I run with if we all ran with every rumor we have, then it would be pretty hard for anybody to get to the truth.
All right. Let's just say, for the sake of conversation, so you think that the Jets will make the biggest play of them all. And
I think in the end the Jets will offer him the most security and the most money.
You don't want to see.
The other thing they have to offer is that he had his greatest success under Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan.
And
the Jets have an offensive coordinator in Jeremy Bates, who's from that coaching
tree.
I don't think that's insignificant either. I think the Jets are going to put a plan in front of them on how they're going to get good. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to stay good. It would take an absolutely leap of faith by Kirk. There's no question about that.
But I do think
the way the Jets will make him feel does matter to some degree, because the Jets are going to make him feel like they're building around him and that he's the future of the franchise. Whereas, we'll see how the Vikings play that game.
Right.
It's possible they wind up going down that route too. This is a player who thinks about everything, and so I do think that, again, he's been in a year-to-year situation for the last 3 years. My feeling is that he wants some stability. And if the Vikings are willing to give that to him, I think he probably goes to Minnesota. If they're willing to give close to the same amount of stability that the Jets are willing to give him, then I think he probably goes to Minnesota. I'm just saying that I'm not sure that part of it's a done deal yet.
All right, before we let you go, and of course a million thanks for all this time, what are the Giants going to do at number two?
Well, I think the Ogletree move is a win-now move that would indicate that maybe now you see them starting to look at other positions outside of quarterback. That said, look, if Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur see a player there that they think is going to be the answer for the next 15 years, they can't pass on him. I think Ernie, of course, you said this in 2004, we don't plan to be drafting this high very often. And if you're not going to be drafting that high very often, time finding one. Most of them come at the top of the draft. And so it's a unique opportunity to take a player at that spot.
So
if there's a quarterback you believe in, you take him.
All right.
If you're shaky on them, or you think they're just good, not great, then I certainly think somebody like a Bradley Chubb or a Quentin Nelson or a Saquon Barkley would be in play. Those are the three non-quarterbacks that I think would be in play at number two. If it's not a quarterback, I think it's either going to be Saquon Barkley, Quentin Nelson, or Bradley Chubb.
Yeah, sure. You're talking pass rusher, you're talking offensive line, the whole thing. But if the Browns take Barkley, what is it possible the Giants at number two move down to get more picks in that first round and beyond?
Well, I'd be surprised if Barkley goes first overall. My feeling is that the Browns either take a quarterback at one or trade to some team that's looking to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how the next few weeks goes for the quarterbacks. I think all of those guys still have a lot to gain over the next few weeks. But I think if the Giants decide they're not taking a quarterback, they will look seriously at the idea of trading down. And look, they should be in a position, potentially to get something for the pick. Because if you look at it, let's just say for argument's sake, the Kirk Cousins signs for the Vikings. Well, then you've got the Broncos at five needing one, and you've got the Jets at six needing one. And so any team that's further on down the line, maybe your Miami at 11, your Arizona at 15, would be looking to trade up. And so, you could have an opportunity there to come away with a lot of picks. And clearly, look, the Giants need more than one thing. The top line of the roster is pretty good. But, it's not the most well-rounded roster right now. There are clearly some depth issues on defense. They've got the well-documented offensive line problems.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of things that they can address in this year's draft if they were going to trade down and accumulate some picks.
You think the Colts might take a quarterback?
No. I think the Colts are comfortable with Andrew Luck, where Andrew Luck is right now. Um, if there's some sort of setback, then we're talking about something else. But as it stands right now at the beginning of March, no, I don't think they take a quarterback.
All right, final question, Albert, and then we'll let you go. As far as you're concerned, as far as the combine, as far as the game film that you've seen, give me the top quarterback of the list that we have been talking about from with UCLA, with USC, with Jackson, with Oklahoma State. Give me the best quarterback.
I think Sam Bradford is still the leader in the clubhouse to be the first one taken. I think Josh Allen has the most upside, but I think the guy who's coming out of last weekend, the best, who had the best weekend in Indy, and the guy who I was clearly the most productive in college is Baker Mayfield.
There you
I've had more than one person, I've had more than a few people tell me that if Baker Mayfield were 6'4", we wouldn't even be discussing who the first pick in the draft is. You got to get comfortable with his height. You got to get comfortable with his attitude, the way he carries himself. But I don't think there's much questioning what kind of player he is, and so I'd go with Baker.
Yeah, see, that's who I want the Jets to take. And here's the thing. People say he's too small, as they said about Drew Brees at one time. They say he's too small. What about off the field with the transgressions? You think if he were to come to New York for the sake of conversation, he could make it?
Well, and that's where, you know, like that's where I think your argument about New York is legitimate, because there's a lot to do there and there's a lot of trouble to get into. And so, you know, I think that part of it, you know, the off-field stuff, I think is certainly, you know, that's where your betting is important, because going to a place like New York is a little different than going to other places. And so, you know, I think he'd be able to handle it. Look, he's played under a, you know, really intense, if smaller stage, but it's an intense spotlight there at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
All the temptations of living in New York, all the trappings of living in New York, that's the stuff I think you'd have to vet out as far as how you would handle it.
Okay. Albert, I can't thank you enough for a half hour here, and we appreciate the time. The opinions are on the record and respected, and I look forward to the next time. Do take care of yourself.
All right. Thanks, Steve. You too.
All right. Albert Breer of MMQB, that's Peter King's whole thing. And, of course, Albert, formerly with the NFL Network.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.